Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the United States Supreme Court, and specifically for Samuel Alito, who wrote the atrociously misguided opinion in Louisiana versus Calais, which has gutted the Voting Rights Act of 1965 and may lead to a dramatic loss of Democrat seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. As many of you know, about a third of Louisiana is African American, which would make you think they would secure two of the six seats in the House. Unfortunately, these black Cajuns have made the mistake of living all over the state in and among the whites instead of segregating themselves into nice, simple, compact areas that would allow for them to have two congressional districts drawn neatly around them. Therefore, in order to get two representatives, the Louisiana legislature had to draw a completely crazy, tortured pair of districts that make no sense to anyone, except that they accomplish the goal of a racial gerrymander in favor of black voters. Well, the Supreme Court struck this down, basically by upholding the 15th Amendment, and now, all because these black Democrats dared to live in and among all the white people of Louisiana, failing to geographically coalesce their voting power, they will only have one or possibly zero districts when all is said and done. If they would have just stayed with their own, all of this would have been solved. Stupid desegregation. But the real problem is that this ruling makes it very hard to use race in drawing district by forcing states to make race-blind maps. Now, some of you might mistakenly think that a post-racial or colorblind society is exactly what we've been dreaming of, but you clearly haven't yet entered your 300-level training in woke principles. Yes, we like to say we are against racism, but it is absolutely vital that we keep using the tool of racial resentment and hostility to foster the social division and conflict with our candidates that they depend on for getting elected. Do you even realize just how much our programs depend on black people and white people not getting along? When 60 years of policies aimed at reducing racial division seem to only produce as much racial division as ever, perhaps you're finally realizing that racial division isn't some uncomfortable byproduct of our policies, but their intended purpose. So the reason we keep talking about race is because we need race as a motivating element in our politics. We must have racism to pretend to fight against it, which means we must always amplify the fear of racial disparity so we can justify policies that claim to fight the racism they depend on. It's like we all work for the SPLC. So even though this ruling technically expands the Voting Rights Act by finally validating the fact that maps may use race to fix past intentional racial oppression, it's very important publicly to talk about the ruling as if the court has attacked the Voting Rights Act. We need to use words like gutted, struck down, limited, eviscerated, or otherwise destroyed to amplify the emotion of our upside-down claim. The good news is that our allies in the traditional media have already been doing this for us since the ruling came out. All on their own. They've learned so well. The counterfactual race-based anger they're stirring up will do wonders for us in the November midterm elections. Now, I know, dear Otherin, you might hear someone say, but I thought we were trying to achieve a future in which people are judged by the content of their character and not by the color of their skin, referencing the famous quote by Martin Luther King Jr. No, this is exactly backwards. We literally want people judged by the color of their skin and not by the content of their character, since judging people by the content of their character is ableist, judgmental, and exclusivist. In other words, code for white supremacy culture. You see, when Dr. King used the phrase content of their character, he did so as a Baptist preacher who believed in Christian morality. As you well know, we do not believe in the traditional Christian values of faith in the God of the Bible, waiting until marriage to have sex, charity, humility, generosity, self-reliance, delayed gratification, and the Protestant work ethic. Besides, the ideas of merit, along with hard work, devotion, skill development, and natural aptitude, are not our virtues at all, because we think all people are equal. Not like made in the image of God equal, but deserving the same government-mandated slice of the pie, given to them on a totally merit-free basis. Dr. King wanted a world where people could work and produce and earn and save and be treated accordingly. In other words, he wanted ableism. And you all know we hate ableism. To each according to his needs, not according to his merit. So no, not only does this ruling make it even harder for us to have power through racial manipulation, it actually brings us closer to a future in which race doesn't matter, which we say we want, but secretly we dread. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, Kaukab Shirani, a reporter at Deutsche Welle, the national German news service, for publishing a report entitled Burnout from Casual Sex Has Women Rethinking Hookup Culture. In the article, Shirani explains the results of a study in which women reported feeling disappointed with themselves after essentially using Tinder. One woman said she felt empty, sad, and temporarily empowered, but always craving more. She felt like she had to cut off a part of herself emotionally during and after one-night stands. As Shirani reported, this phenomenon is called post-coital dysphoria, PCD. And women suffering it say they desire easy sex, but then feel used, depressed, unfulfilled, and emotionally numb afterwards. Men, of course, also sometimes experience PCD, but they seem to get over it much faster for whatever reason. I just don't know where to start with these reports. First, what a great world we live in where men and women can finally engage in the unencumbered free sex that we could only dream of in the 60s. Between contraception, pharmaceutical abortion, the internet and hookup apps, and an entertainment culture that never shows happily married people, the anti-marriage society has arrived. We have completely overcome the traditional model of waiting until marriage for sex and then having sex only inside the confines of lifelong commitment and for the purpose of having children. The sexual revolution is complete, but these women don't seem to be grateful at all for the liberation we've given them. I mean, it's certainly not the case that something deep inside every woman yearns for a permanent and safe relationship of unconditional love and trust with a husband who echoes the security of being loved completely by her Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. That's ridiculous. In fact, women must overcome the primitive belief in monogamy and its unenlightened notions of security, commitment, and devotion, which some fools believe actually do the most to protect women from the sort of society ours has become. We've finally gotten to where women can be as selfish and depraved as men, and now the only thing left for them to do is just do it and lie to themselves afterwards that they enjoy it. If you can be just like men, then you can finally be women. So my advice to these women who claim to be suffering from PCD is simple. Woman up. Push through it. Get out there and throw yourself around so much that you can only guesstimate your body count. Only then, in the fully transcendent euphoria of utter debauchery, will things like a guilty conscience, personal unfulfillment, and regret at the ruination of your intended design leave you so that you can finally be a modern, independent, and liberated woman. Miserable? Sure. But if we learned anything from Sex and the City, it's that misery loves the company of friends who are just as miserable as you are. Woe unto all who offend. Finally, our highest praise this week and the official djembe drum of justice with two rainbow streamers goes to actor Anne Hathaway for her outstanding efforts at body positivity and inclusivity in cinema during the filming of The Devil Wears Prada 2. As a note, I know some of you are still in the habit of calling female actors by the now outdated term actresses, since we did originally fight to have this separate designation in order to affirm females by making them different from men, but now in our most recent gender-free world, we have advanced backwards to calling all actors actors in an effort to affirm females by making them the same as men. I know it's hard to keep up, but you can do it. Portable diagrams of this reasoning process are available in the back, if you need them. Regardless, on the set of Prada 2, Anne Hathaway realized the fashion models being used as extras in one scene were all very thin, as is normal in the actual fashion industry. Upset by this overwhelming sense of realism, she suggested to the producers that they replace these thin models with other, fluffier people who would look, you know, less like actual models.
That I thought the scene would be so much more enjoyable for the audience if we had just a wider range of bodies on display because all different shapes are beautiful.
So many good notes here. Obviously, audiences really will enjoy looking at models who aren't as pleasant to look at, just not in the normal way people enjoy things they look at. Obviously, it will feel fake compared to the modeling world's actual practices, and also because, well, the plus-size, double-size, pear-shaped, or whatever alternative bodies are used will be less appealing to their eyes. But their dislike of the less model-like models will be replaced by the steady, smooth, relaxed pleasure of knowing they're supporting a virtue signal level 4. Their eyes may tell them the scene is uglier, but anti-reality training will kick in and provide the warmth that comes only from practicing double-plus ungood truth-speak. Now, it's true that some cretins have suggested that if Anne Hathaway were truly serious about changing the level of representation for beauty-challenged models, she could have encouraged the producers to find a less pretty actor than Anne Hathaway to perform the role. But obviously, the reason the super-thin and sexy Anne Hathaway can't be replaced is because you can only do so much at one time. And even though it might seem hypocritical to enjoy a career built largely on having a sex symbol, well, keep in mind that we never object to hypocrisy as long as it's being used to advance our agenda. It does raise another issue for us, though. As good as it is for Anne Hathaway to fire people who worked hard for a long time to craft their bodies into something the fashion industry rewarded and replace them with people who did not, we call that being inclusive, we see an even greater opportunity to advance the cause of equality and fight against the forces of ableism in the acting world. You see, in addition to being smoking hot, Anne Hathaway is also a highly skilled actor, talented at drama and comedy. But shouldn't we be working toward a world where people born with less acting talent can be just as successful at acting? A world where people who can't memorize lines, can't deliver them, don't emote well, have trouble pretending to be what they are not, or simply aren't funny or dramatic, can be actors too. Why should people who relate to audiences and make compelling theater get all the jobs? Or any of the jobs? Aren't people who can't act, whether they were born bad at it or never developed their talents, people who never worked at their craft at all, aren't they just as entitled to starring roles too? So although Anne Hathaway has made a good first step, we slap enthusiastically on our djembe drum in anticipation of a world where movies feature overweight models, homely leading ladies, badly written scripts, poorly lit stages, and terribly edited scenes filled with people who can't act, like The Real Housewives or Saturday Night Live. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.